This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
The European Commission has today adopted two adequacy decisions for the United Kingdom, one under the General Data Protection Regulation and one under the Law Enforcement Directive. Personal data can now flow freely from the European Union to the United Kingdom, where it benefits from an essentially equivalent level of protection to that guaranteed under EU law.
Welcome to the 200th episode of the Law Bites podcast. A little over 5 years ago, I launched the podcast with an episode featuring Elizabeth Denham, then the UK's Information and Privacy Commissioner, who provided her perspective on Canadian privacy law. I must admit, I didn't know what the future would hold for the podcast, but I certainly didn't envision reaching 200 episodes. It's been a fun, entertaining, and educational ride. I'm grateful to the incredible array of guests, government ministers, MPs, senators, commissioners, entrepreneurs, executives, lawyers, and academics from around the world. The strength of the podcast comes from these people taking time out of their busy schedules to discuss and debate emerging digital policy issues. Thanks must also go to Gerardo Lebrun Leboy, who's been there to help produce every episode. I doubt Gerardo envisioned 200 episodes either, but I'm thankful for his assistance week in, week out. And of course, thanks goes to the listeners. This podcast gets a significant audience each week. Older episodes often provide value years later and make their way into course curriculum, and the feedback is always appreciated. I'm planning to keep going, and for this 200th episode, the podcast goes back to where it started, with a look at Canadian privacy through the eyes of Europe. It flew under the radar screen for many, but earlier this year, the European Union concluded that Canada's privacy law still provides an adequate level of protection for personal information. That decision comes as a bit of a surprise to many, given that Bill C-27 is currently at clause-by-clause review, and there has been years of criticism that Canadian privacy law is outdated. To help understand the importance of the EU adequacy finding and its application to Canada, I'm joined by Colin Bennett, one of the world's leading authorities on privacy and privacy governance. Colin is Professor Emeritus at the University of Victoria, as well as an Associate Fellow at the Centre for Global Studies. Colin, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Michael. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you've taken the time out to come and join again. You know, it flew under the radar screen, I think, for many, but earlier this year, the European Union concluded that Canada's privacy law still provides an adequate level of privacy protection for many. I feel almost tempted to repeat that again, because it surely comes as a surprise to many. As we record this, we're in the midst of Bill C-27, the privacy and AI reform bill, currently at a very slow clause-by-clause review, which I think one would have thought would be as good a reason as any to hold off on judging Canadian privacy law, not to mention that there has been years of criticism that the law is outdated, especially when you compare it to EU law. So I'm glad you've come on to unpack this decision and figure out really what's going on. Why don't we start with the basics for those that are unfamiliar with the system? What are EU privacy or data protection adequacy assessments? How do they fit within the broader context of EU privacy law? And to the extent we know it, how do they judge other countries' laws?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'll try and explain as simply as possible, because it's extraordinarily complex. I mean, it goes back a long way. It goes back to the time of the former European Union directive adequacy assessments. And it's basically the Europeans' concerns that businesses shouldn't be able to minimize or undermine Europeans' privacy rights by processing data offshore. And so adequacy assessments go back to the mid-1990s, and the initial Canadian assessment occurred in 2001. And so this whole regime then transferred over to the General Data Protection Regulation that was passed in 2018, with some amendments and some further elaboration, but essentially it's a similar process. And what the Europeans are looking for, they've said, is basic privacy principles, the basic fair information data protection principles of the kind that you see in Schedule 1 of PIPEDA, some kind of system of redress, an independent supervisory authority. It doesn't need to be a data protection authority or privacy commissioner, so long as there's somewhere that the individual can go to in order to seek redress, and then some evidence of compliance, you know, not just paper laws that are not abided by, but some evidence of compliance. And it's not just an analysis of data protection law. They should also be now analyzing other instruments, both legal, self-regulation, code, standards. So in other words, the entire privacy regime. And they also want to make sure that this regime is set within a general respect for the rule of law and human rights. So in other words, otherwise fantastic data protection laws that are in countries that do not respect human rights would not pass the test. So that's basically how they judge whether or not another country has an adequate level of protection. And if that judgment is positive, then data can transfer to those jurisdictions in the same way that it flows around the European Union.
Okay, so I want to pick up exactly where you left off, this notion of data flows, and that I take it is really the relevance of being found to meet the adequacy standards. You hear about countries wanting to ensure that they have that. You know, what are the implications for countries that meet that adequacy standard, that get this seal of approval, so to speak, from the EU? And then, of course, I assume that there are many others that haven't been able to receive that same kind of approval.
Yeah, well, it's the most convenient way to meet the European legal standards. It means that a company that processes data transfer from the European Union really doesn't have to do anything else if it doesn't wish to. Many will, but it doesn't have to negotiate contracts. It doesn't have to have codes of practice. It doesn't have to have anything else. It can rely on this judgment, this safe harbor, and freely process those data. And this is particularly important for small and medium enterprises who, you know, which may not have the resources to pay expensive legal fees to negotiate those contracts. So it's a jurisdictional assessment rather than a company by company assessment.
Okay. Now you mentioned that the Canada was previously reviewed back in 2001. Can you talk a little bit about what we know, if anything, about that process? It obviously came back at a time when PIPEDA was just coming onto the scene, although there was at least one province, in the province of Quebec, that had private sector privacy law that predated PIPEDA.
Yeah. So, the European Union said at the time that to the extent that businesses are covered by PIPEDA, then they're covered. So it wasn't a jurisdictional assessment for Canada as a whole because of our federal structure and because of the fact that, you know, there are some organizations that are not covered by PIPEDA. But most of them that would be engaged in international data transfers, by definition, would be covered by PIPEDA. So the European Union judged that our system was adequate. And then periodically, there's been, you know, reviews of this. The law says it has to be every 4 years, but there's been slippage there. And from time to time, the government has provided updates to the European Union Commission on legal reforms or changes to the law or other important decisions by the Privacy Commissioner, for example, to keep them updated on how our system is working in practice.
Okay, interesting. So we have seen some of those updates, and obviously there have been any number of Privacy Commissioner decisions, quite a few, obviously, yep, over the couple of decades. There have been some privacy reforms. It feels to me that most of them have really been at the margins, where they've addressed more narrow issues. We haven't seen kind of comprehensive privacy reform that's at the heart of Bill C-27, which is really a major overhaul. But of course, while we have not been moving as quickly through that process, the EU made major changes. You mentioned the GDPR that took effect back in 2018. Does that mean that the EU standards would also change? Obviously, they added a lot to their law at that point in time. Does that suggest that as they review other jurisdictions, that they want to see it commensurate with these newer EU standards?
Well, this is where it all gets a bit vague. They've said that the law does not have to be a photocopy of the GDPR, even though some countries have actually cut and paste many of those provisions. But, you know, exactly how much flexibility there is in what a country might do in order to meet the adequacy standard is subject to question. And also, you know, frankly, political judgments, subjective judgments. So you mentioned the GDPR. Yeah, there is several sections of the GDPR that talk about international transfers. And in Article 45, it lays out the procedures for getting adequacy. But that's not the only way. So companies, for example, can have standard contractual clauses. There's binding corporate rules. There's approved code of conduct, certification mechanisms. So if a jurisdiction does not have an adequacy judgment, then there's other things that companies can do, either individually or as part of trade associations, to ensure that the data can flow freely. So adequacy is not the only mechanism. But the thing that really did change was judgments by the European Court of Justice in the so-called Schrems decisions, which invalidated the various agreements between the United States and the European Union for international data flows, which established a standard of essential equivalence. In other words, the receiving jurisdiction has to have a regime taken as a whole, which is essentially equivalent to that of the European Union. And so that really is now the standard legally. And that is what the Commission and other bodies in the European Union have got to try to interpret. So, you know, that's the law. And one way or another, Canada has now been judged essentially equivalent. The other aspect of this, and we'll probably get onto this, is that it's not just about corporate to corporate transfers. They're also deeply, deeply interested in the what happens when those data might be accessed by government agencies, law enforcement, national security and intelligence agencies. And those were the issues that sunk the prior agreements with the United States.
Right. And I want to come to that in a moment. You're right. Those Schrems cases, of course, coming directly out of that. But before we do that, you know, I guess what's your take on if the requirement is essential equivalence, and we've got the EU having established GDPR with a number of provisions that we may be some of which we are considering as part of C27, but are not part of our law. You know, how do we explain an EU finding that is effectively saying that we, even without those changes, we've got essential equivalence?
This is what was puzzling, and as you said, you know, it would have been far better if they'd just waited to see what comes out of C27 and you know, make a decision then. But you know, a few things to consider. I think I've been told that the EU is very concerned that you know, all of the G7 economies be covered by this adequacy regime, and with Japan getting through the process over the last few years, you know, and one can have questions about the Japanese data protection system as well, including Canada in the list of renewing the Canadian adequacy assessment. From that point of view, you know, makes some sense. I think also one other thing that's occurred is that a number of the countries that have got adequacy judgments are very, very small jurisdictions who are sort of on the fringes of the European Union, like Jersey or Andorra or the Faroe Islands, you know, places that, you know, you've got to look on a map to figure out exactly where they are. And they've cut and placed the GDPR into those laws. So those countries have been saying, look, you know, we've just done exactly the same thing as the European Union. Why can't you give us an adequacy assessment? And then I think there was a delay. This is the other point to consider. The GDPR says that these reviews have to occur at least once every 4 years. Now, the GDPR passed in 2018, so that really should have happened back in, 2022. The pandemic intervened, obviously. So I think there was a delay. There was a, you know, delay that was essentially in contravention of the GDPR. So there was some pressure on the Commission to get these reviews done. And I guess they couldn't wait and see whether or not C27 went through. I mean, you know, who knows? you know, because of, you know, impending election and the delays, etc. So they can't wait on individual countries, you know, political legal processes in order to, you know, make these judgments.
Yeah. I mean, does that make you think that perhaps there's almost an element of anticipatory reform that's at play here? This legislation is obviously been on the table for quite some time.
Yeah, I think so. And I wrote about this in the article. I think it's very important to read this as a process rather than a sort of snapshot judgment in time. And the commission talks a lot about convergence. Now, what they mean by that is convergence with the European standard, right? Which is, quite frankly, a bit patronizing in my judgment. But nevertheless, it's a process. And what they're seeing in Canada is a process. You know, we may differ with some of the reforms that have been made and whether or not they really add up to anything. But they look at the overall set of, you know, policy proposals and legal reforms and decisions by the Privacy Commissioner, etc. And they look at it overall from 30,000 feet and say, well, there is an equivalent level of protection in Canada. The principles are there. The Privacy Commissioner seems to be doing his job in investigating cases, including, of course, some, you know, really, really big companies that are of interest to the European Union as well, Facebook, Google, Clearview AI, etc. And, you know, there seems to be a system of redress. So from that level, it looks, quote unquote, essentially equivalent. But, you know, as you and I know, and anybody else who, you know, digs beneath the surface of Canadian data protection, there's all kinds of flaws. There's all kinds of weaknesses in our system. But it looks as if the European were not really interested in that sort of critique, you know, from the point of view of the essential judgment about whether or not it looks adequate.
Yeah, no. Speaking of areas that could use improvement or that there's been some amount of concern around, you mentioned the EU's emphasis on government access to personal data. You know, what does it say in the decision? And do you think that many of the Canadian experts that have looked at this issue would, well, effectively agree with how the EU has concluded?
Well, one thing that's off the bat I say is it's not quite clear to me what experts they consulted with. The judgments, and there's a basic finding by the commission, and then there's a country report on Canada, is very much a sort of black letter law analysis. There's no reference to any other sources beyond official sources. So, you know, one wonders, you know, why it took so long to do that kind of legal judgment. But one of the most interesting things, perhaps the most interesting thing of this, is what they say about access by public authorities, that's law enforcement, government agencies, national security, intelligence agencies, because it is very, very detailed. They are aware, of course, of the Schrems decisions and what the court has said about these data having to be necessary and proportionate. They're aware that there needs to be systems of independent redress, etc. And so they go through Section 8 cases under our constitution. They go through Privacy Act analysis. They go through NSIRA, the National Security Intelligence Review Agency process. Lots and lots of data in there. And that it is very, very detailed. And I read this as being, you know, a contrast to what's in the United States, because it's the lack of, or the perceived lack of, necessity and proportionality in the bulk data collection by American security agencies, as well as the real lack of any independent redress mechanism in the United States that has sank both the Safe Harbor Agreement and the Privacy Shield. And so I think this says to the US, look, Canada's done this okay. Well, we might disagree with that, but from their point of view, it contrasts with the system in the United States. So I expect that Canadian lawyers, legal experts, privacy experts are going to looking at this section very, very, very carefully to ensure that, in fact, you know, what we do up here in Canada is indeed in contrast to the weaker system in the US.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned or alluded to your CG piece, which I think is really excellent. It walks through many of these issues. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Now, you conclude that piece by suggesting that the EU decision, may be a warning. How so?
Well, I don't know. This is a bit speculative, but there is language in there which, suggests that states positively, clearly, that the European Union is going to be keeping a watching brief on Canadian developments, including C-27, right? And so, any attempt to weaken a privacy regime in PIPEDA would not go down well with our European colleagues. I think that's clear. The other thing is that, as I mentioned, it is very much there's a lot of narrative here about journeys, and we're all in this together, and we're all trying to advance in our different ways according to our different constitutional and administrative traditions, the basic value of protection of privacy. And so, they're looking for, a continual process here and a continual progress towards better privacy protection. There's also an interesting development, which is, an attempt to bring together representatives from all of the countries that have an adequacy finding to discuss issues of common concern. So there's a bit of a kind of a data protection club here, and we need to keep watch of that as well. So, I think I don't know whether it's the warning's the right word, but they'll be looking very, very closely at C-27 to ensure that what the government said it was going to do to allegedly improve PIPEDA, and I can see that there are some improvements in C-27 over PIPEDA, that those do in fact get passed into law.
Okay. Now, why don't we conclude with this? The adequacy issue has been a focal point, I think, for many countries for many years. You talked about some of the smaller countries that have had an interest. There have been larger ones that have had an interest, sometimes unsuccessfully. And that process has always been a bit of a mystery. It's kind of quite opaque as to what happens, and suddenly decisions sometimes come along, and sort of that's that. What do you think this decision ultimately says about the credibility of the process? You've referenced a few times that, well, there may be a desire to get all G7 countries on board. They've got pressures from other sources. That might lead someone to conclude that this is more politics than actual policy.
Well, I think it's a bit of both. There's been the suspicions over the years that subjective political considerations do enter into not so much the assessments, but the priorities. And so they have to be very, very careful that they are, in fact, for international trade reasons, applying, a consistent set of standards. But as I mentioned, privacy law is subjective in many respects. It doesn't lend itself to clear, hard, bright line rule standards, So there's a lot that goes into the reading of legal provisions, which can be seen as positive or negative. And the assessments about Canada are entirely positive. They've checked cherry-picked all the good stuff, right? They've cherry-picked the as you mentioned, the various reforms that have gone through, which I as you say you said are quite minimal, quite marginal. They've cherry-picked some of the decisions, the decisions by the Privacy Commissioner, and they've not looked at the complete picture. So some people do think this process is broken, particularly American commentators who look at some of the countries that have got adequacy judgments and say, well, wait a minute, what really is the system of data protection in that country? Does it really is it really more adequate than we have in the United States, for example? So there's a lot of that. In the past, there's also been some suspicions that, hosting the International Privacy Commissioners Conference can get you a positive assessment. I don't know how to read that, but the fact that Israel and Uruguay are on the list, those countries got positive adequacy assessments, and then they hosted the conference. So, there's the system is subject to suspicion. On the other side of the ledger, however, it's clear to me that the adequacy process, and indeed the threat that data flows might be stopped by the Commission, even though that rarely, rarely happens, is something that has prompted the passage of data protection law around the world, including Latin America, in Asia, in Africa. So it's a significant force. It's not the only one which gets other countries outside of Europe to think seriously about this issue, to learn about the law, to understand, you know, where the Europeans are coming from with respect to fundamental privacy rights, and to fashion laws which, you know, are quote unquote essentially equivalent. So it is a very, very important example of what people call the Brussels effect. It's not the only impetus, but it's an important one. And then, you know, you have these continuing disputes with the United States about this issue. The Americans have now fashioned a third agreement with the European Union, which is going to be challenged by Max Schrems in court because it doesn't offer essentially equivalent levels of protection. And so the drama goes on. Also in the United States, you have a new bill that's been dropped in Congress. There's hearings this week, the American Privacy, which, you know, is an indication that, you know, perhaps at the end of this process, there will be a comprehensive a U.S. privacy protection law that, you know, is equivalent to that in the European Union. I think that's what, you know, the Europeans hope will happen, so that they don't have to continue to negotiate these agreements on a, you know, you know, every so years, and have companies sign up to them individually, and declare that in fact they are compliant with those standards.
That's a really interesting overall assessment, pointing to the influence that this process can have. And, you know, I think that in some ways it shaped some of the dialogue in Canada as well over time, with this fear that as the gap between Europe and Canada seemed to grow over time, that at some point in time there would be a real risk from a trade flow perspective, which for some was an impetus to finally move in the area. Having now received an adequacy finding without having completed our process, it became a bit of a head scratcher. But I think you've done a great job of explaining that process. And, you know, I know that you've mentioned the EU will be continue to watching what we're doing. I know you will be, and I know I will be as well in the coming months. And so I'm grateful for your vigilance on these issues and for taking the time to join me on the podcast.
Thanks very much, Michael. Enjoyed it.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter @LawBitesPod or Michael Geist @MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe via RSS at Apple Podcast, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for the clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes for this episode at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.